All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I like to also let you know that I am the author of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and my partner, Chen Lin, who will be with me later today, he publishes a newsletter, What is Chen Buying, What is Chen Selling?, has had a remarkable track record, and he has some ideas he wants to pass along to you today, so I hope that you'll stick around during the second segment of the day to hear what Chen Lin has to say. This is the 17th, I think this is the 31st day of October 2017. Whatever, the end, we're getting towards the end of 2017, and we're going to look anxiously, listen anxiously to Michael Oliver has to say with regard to where he thinks we're going to end up here and where we're heading in 2018 as well. I do want to thank each of you for listening to this show, and we want to thank our sponsors, as always, for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for today's show, New Range Gold Corp, Klondike Gold Corp, RN Resources, Novo Resources, and Genesis Metals Corp. I've titled today's show A Repeat of the 1970s Inflation or Worse. John Rubino, Chen Lin, and Michael Oliver, my guests today. You know, price action in markets often seems counterintuitive, and Alistair McLeod recently explained in fundamental terms why stocks often decline even as earnings begin to rise, because stock prices have much more to do with the flows of money than they do with economic fundamentals. At least that's the way it seems these days. Last week, Richard Mayberry opined that an increase in monetary velocity may be starting now, and that could trigger much higher prices as people become start treating their currency as hot potatoes. They want to get rid of it because they realize it's going to lose value. Well, when that mindset sets in, it causes people to behave differently. Indeed, my own inflation deflation watch, which measures not just the items measured in the CPI, but also financial assets, is starting to break out to new highs. So the big question on my mind, and on the minds of many other people, understand that inflation is, in fact, monetary expansion, are very concerned with the question as to whether we may now be facing a very serious inflationary event in terms of everyday living costs. We've had massive inflation, of course, in the equity markets and the bond markets, and that's served to redistribute wealth from those that create it to those that control it. That's the injustice of our system. But that's the way it is. Now we want to be sure that we're ready as much as possible to adjust to those changes in the economy. About a half past the hour today, John Rubino will be with me. We'll discuss some of those issues. And also, John has some things he wants to talk to us about cryptocurrencies, or at least some things I want to ask John about cryptocurrencies. And right after our first commercial break, Chen Lin will be with me to talk about a couple of his favorite stocks. He's done extremely well in the biotech sector. He likes to pick up the babies as they're developing new products, and he's got one or two he may talk to us about today, as well as one of his favorite energy stocks. But right now, I'm really pleased to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me again. Thanks for being with me again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you. In your weekend report, you talked about some key levels for the S&P 500. You know, the doggone S&P 500, I don't think it's ever going to go down again, Michael, but you talked about, I think one of the numbers I noticed was 2556, I think, on the S&P and 2570 in November. What happens, what are your What are your thoughts about the S&P 500 now? It's just
Well, we measure it via intermediate and long-term metrics. And the first long-term number that really looks bad any time this quarter is 2503.1, to be precise. That's 4% over the three-quarter average. If you touch that, there's a massive floor that comes out on the oscillator that goes back a year. In other words, all yet this year, every time the S&P drops to 5% over its three-quarter average, it stops. It will never touch 4. And therefore, when you plot it that way, instead of a price chart, which of course is a pattern of ascending lows, on the momentum chart you have a pattern of flat lows, 5 of them in fact. When you plot it on monthly bar versus the three-quarter average. So if you touch 2503 and change, boom, that breaks. Okay, now, how do you get there? Because we're 2577, so we're a couple, 2.5% or so above that number. Well, we have to have something smaller to trigger it, to sort of get it going in that direction. And so we look at things like a 10-week moving average oscillator with its trend structure. That's the one we focused on there. And that one said, we've got a 3-point uptrend line on that momentum chart, and if you break it, you're probably going to stumble. Well, mm-hmm. That could be the stumble that gets you down to that bigger number, okay? So it's like a little domino falls into the bigger one.
Yeah.
That number for this week is 2556. It jumps up about 12 points a week. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the S&P has to constantly stay in front of that number, otherwise it's going to stumble.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I don't think they can, even the price guys don't want a 20-30 point stumble now. You know, they had one last week and they recovered quickly from it, but you don't want to go back down again. I think it's getting a little tenuous up here, and it's really not exploding. It's more or less inching higher if you really look at it. And so we think it should be treated that way. And until it starts to stumble, we're not going to get excited. But the numbers aren't far below, like, you know, 20 points below or so, or next week. Even 10 points below here will start to look pretty ugly on an intermediate basis. And then the question is, can that first little stumble get you down to break a leg? And we measure it that way in layers, and that's what we see.
Get the dominoes to start tumbling, I guess.
Yeah, it's a domino effect type thing. Yeah, no one signal is holy. You know, the little one falls into the medium one, falls into the bigger one, and then finally you're really in trouble. So that's how we're treating it right now. It's just sitting back and measuring. Meanwhile, I'm sound asleep on the other markets. GDX and gold gold's having a $10 down month. It's about where it opened the month, actually. GDX has gone sideways for 10 months. It's probably the most sedate 10 months in the history of the GDX. It's up 7.6% on the year and gone totally to sleep. And it's waiting on something. A lot of markets are waiting right now, in fact. We think that one of the biggest booms next year is going to be in the grains. We thought that this past summer. It started to materialize and then wavered. But the pullback in grains didn't negate itself. It just sort of said, it's not quite ready. And then when we run our new numbers for next year, you know, like a new three-year average and so forth, they start to measure where the grains are in relation to those, and therefore in terms of breakouts on momentum. They're just lollygagging around right now, where if you just can hold here for about 8 more weeks and open next year, you're going to be breaking out through stuff. So I'm beginning to wonder, could we stay asleep for the rest of the year so that some of these massive defaulted upside breakouts, as in the grains, which is the part of the commodity complex that has not reared its head yet.
Yeah,
and that's the one that'll get attention when the food starts to go up, cattle and meats, cattle and grains especially. And they're poised to where all they have to do is just loiter. When you get into January, which is, say, about 9.5 weeks from now, it's a boom. They can explode. And I think that would shock a lot of people because so far they've not participated.
And that would be, if we saw some sort of major increase in the grains, that sort of it works its way through the food chain, I guess, and starts to really...
Also take that Bloomberg Commodity Index and start to run it upstairs again, too. So far, the move in commodities this past year or so has been gold and oil and copper. The soft commodities, the soft food, sugar, cocoa, and coffee, meats have been under pressure and are now stabilized, and grains have just been asleep. But the food complex of the commodity complex looks like it's really ripe for a 2018 massive surge. And when I say massive, I mean something on the order of 30 to 40% rapidly.
Wow.
Especially in the grains. And that's way beyond the 2% that the central banks want.
And then what are they going to do, Michael? What are they going to do then? If all of a sudden now you still have this massive amount of debt on the books, keeps growing all the time, and now all of a sudden you've got, you know, as a politically important inflationary number coming out, you and I agree that there's inflation, that money is created out of nothing and it goes into the equity markets or wherever it goes somewhere. Financial markets have been in a boom. And now what happens with all this debt, and the Fed is in a position where it's got to raise rates?
Well, that's going to be a pretty picture. Because if they want to follow what they've already said is their goal, if they can get their 2% plus inflation, that they'll then start to tighten up a bit, that's going to be rather awkward, because I think they're going to have a stock market that's in trouble, and their bond markets. So I'm looking at the T-bonds in the U.S., the German bunds, and the GGBs, the Japanese government bonds, these are all traded in the futures markets, by the way, look highly vulnerable to a very large collapse next year. And I say that because it's not because they're high and they shouldn't have been here in the first place and all that stuff. I'm talking prices now. It's the structure of their momentum trends that is so ominous looking. I've got floors on the JGB on a momentum chart that goes back a decade. And it's like, the bigger the floor you break, the bigger the drop. This is a chart that's one of the ugliest momentum charts I've ever seen in 30 years. And I see the same sort of thing in the U.S. T-bonds, which are already in a negative mode, in my view, and in the German bonds. So what I'm seeing is potential for commodity price explosion, especially the food side of the equation. And then, two, on the other side of that, government bonds look very precarious. So the central banks are going to be in a very funny situation. I'm going to laugh my head off when these forces come into play, because what are they going to do? They're going to raise rates?
That's just the point. They can't raise rates, it seems. Yeah. I mean, they can, but all this debt.
It's going to be fun. Justice will be served, and I love it in that regard.
Well, yes, and that should finally knock the equity markets down. And it's not that we're cheering for suffering and pain and all that, Michael, but we know that these things have run excessively beyond where they should be because of manipulation of the markets through the monetary system, right? Mm-hmm. I think you agree with me on that.
It's not that it shouldn't have occurred in the first place. Nature will take over, put it back to some mode of reality, and quite possibly oscillate the mean, meaning, as much distortion went one way, it might distort itself the other way to compensate for it.
Right.
Markets are mean that way.
Michael, as we head into a new year then, I guess you're most bullish on the grains, on the soft commodities, oil, and some of those leaders now, where they sort of take a back seat. Do you think they'll be okay?
Gold, I think, will still
you see
hold
any
the leadership position. Oil, I think, if it can get to where I think it's headed soon, in the next month or so, up to 60 area, I think it could take a break. And maybe not be a major contributor. I think the grains have the greatest potential for percentage rapid upside.
And
we have
2018
specific numbers that I provide to our subscribers of where those numbers begin. And I think that would be the beach ball coming out from under the water in a whoosh when you let go of it. You know what I mean? Sort of effect. So for rapid money on the upside, I think it's the grains and to some extent other foods. I think gold will continue to lead commodities. I think it in particular will get benefited when equity holders get nervous and they start to say, this is not so much fun anymore. I think I'm going to go over there. And when they realize that gold's done almost as well as the S&P, they'll realize, how come we didn't notice that?
You talk about being lulled to sleep, the bond holders, the idea the interest rates we're never going to have any kind of runaway interest rates or equity markets can't go down. Sooner or later, those of us who have been around for a number of cycles know that's not true. So,
the belief that central banks control things, they've controlled it longer than they normally have. But recall, did Ben Bernanke stop the stock market collapse of 2008? He fought all the way down, and he didn't stop it.
Neither did Greenspan.
It went to where it wanted to go, and then finally it responded to central bank action. But in the decline, it said, we don't care. So
yeah.
Boy, the Fed is not always
said that. Yeah, viciously it said that. So,
yes.
Michael, thank you. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with
thank
us
you,
again.
Jay.
Folks, it's OliverMSA.com, OliverMSA.com. Michael's the best there is as far as I'm concerned when it comes to, you know, I want to play prevent defense when I'm long in the market. I just want you to tell me, Michael, when we're going to have, you know, when it's going to be time to get out. And if it's a little early, that's fine too. But I just don't want to lose my 80% again in a bear market in the gold shares. So if you can help me with that and our listeners, we'll be eternally grateful to you. Thank you so much, Michael, for being with us. So, folks, don't go away. We're going to be right back with Chen Lin. He's got some ideas in the biotech sector as well as an energy stock or two as well. So we'll be right back with Chen Lin.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Orin Resources is a Canadian-based gold exploration company focused on the company's flagship Committee Bay project, located in northern Canada, one of the best mining jurisdictions in the world. The company's current resource outlined by drilling thus far stands at 1.1 million ounces of gold at over 8 grams per ton. Orin is operated by the same team that founded Asanko Gold, which is constructing a major gold mine in West Africa, and Caden Resources, which was recently purchased in November for over $200 million.
New Range Gold Corp is a Canadian junior explorer focused on its recently acquired flagship Pamlico Gold Project, located in Nevada, one of the best mining jurisdictions in the world. Known as one of Nevada's highest grade gold districts, Pamlico was held by private interests for most of its history and remains largely unexplored. Drilling by New Range is already confirming the legendary grades of the district with intercepts up to 341 grams gold per ton. Well-financed with no debt, New Range is unlocking shareholder value at Pamlico and trades under TSX symbol NRG.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.